Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Get going now.
From KMOX Sports.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
This is the Graybar Sports Open Live. Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Here we go on a Tuesday night. Welcome in. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Great to have you with us tonight, taking you all the way until 8 o'clock. We've got a lot coming up on the program today. First off, if you want to chime in with what we're talking about, you could do so by calling or texting 314-436-7900. That's 314-436-7900. That's how you call. That's how you text. You could tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air. And for those of you who are watching the video stream on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, you can leave a comment in the chat, and we can get to that as we go along. We've got a bunch coming up on the show tonight. Amy Marks, of course, is going to be with us. Of course, you hear her during Chris and Amy, but we always call her Hockey Amy when she comes here because we talk hockey, and she is awesome talking hockey, so much so that the folks over at Channel 4 and Matrix Midwest have brought her in. She and Chris Kerber are going to be doing a weekly Blues TV show, so we'll talk a little bit about that and also give her thoughts on the Blues as the season opens up on Thursday night. The hockey season is getting underway today. Three games are being played today, so a happy hockey season for those of you who celebrate. The NHL season is officially started, and the first game of the day, Blackhawks-Panthers, that game is tied 2-2 through two periods. Penguins are going to match up against the Rangers, and the Avalanche and Kings are going to play tonight as well. So Hockey Amy's going to join us in about 10 minutes here on the program. Later on this hour, we'll talk a little bit about what's going on. And I think the baseball playoff series that is of most interest to Cardinals fans, it's the Brewers and the Cubs. Milwaukee won their first two games at home. Now the series is shifting to Chicago for game number three. Jerry Augustine, a former Brewers pitcher who does pregame and postgame work on radio with the Brewers, he is going to join us coming up at about 6:35. And then next hour at 7, just right out of the gates after the 7 o'clock news, we're going to talk with Rob Raines. Rob, of course, has covered the Cardinals for a long time, stlsportspage.com. I wanted to bring him on today because he wrote a really long piece about Chaim Bloom that takes you through Chaim's baseball journey. He talked with a number of people who were part of that journey. It goes all the way back to, well, it goes back to Chaim growing up, but from a you know, baseball career standpoint, goes back to when he was in college and in 2003, spending time at the baseball winter meetings, just trying to find a job in baseball and everything that he's done and just the path that he took. And we all have unique paths to get to wherever we happen to be. But it certainly was that a unique path for Chaim Bloom. And we're going to talk with Rob Raines coming up in just a little while. Also, at about 7:30 or so, if you missed the conversation that Chaim had with the Gas House Gang today, today it was Tom Ackerman, Chris Ronji, and Bernie Miklas. Chaim was on for a good half hour or so today, and they talked about a bunch of stuff. It was a really great conversation, and I would encourage you to go back and listen to the whole thing from start to finish. But in case you didn't hear it, or if you just want to hear my thoughts on it, what we're going to do at about 7:30 is we're going to play back a lot of what Chaim had to say and kind of go through the key points. Here were the things that I took away from Chaim's conversation today. I thought it was notable, the things he said about Oliver Marmol and the things that he noticed about Ollie, really appreciating. He wasn't discounting so much the in-game strategy or X's or O's or anything like that, but it was more about the culture inside the clubhouse, the way players wanted to play for Ollie. He really appreciated that, and that was a lot of the reasons for bringing Ollie back next year. So you'll hear from that. You'll also, there's many, you know, as many Cardinal fans that are frustrated that Oliver Marmol is going to be back, I feel like that same group of Cardinals fans feel like it's an ownership group that does not give the resources needed, I would push back on both those things, and I would very much push back. But Haim talked about ownership and the DeWitts and the resources that are needed, and not just needed, but have been needed in the past tense, because he's somebody who put together he did a full audit of the organization during his first year in the organization, and then presented it to the DeWitts. And then coming out of that, it was, okay, well, what's needed? And more people were needed. More technology was needed. More infrastructure was needed. And it continues to be needed. They're not where they want to be yet. I thought it was, he at one point in the conversation when talking about adding human capital to the organization, about adding more people, he said, you don't want it to be a clown car where all of a sudden a million people just get out of the car and all of a sudden they're all standing in the organization, that there has to be a plan to it. So this past year, they definitely added people. A lot of it was done in terms of player development, and they are going to continue to add people. They're going to add scouts. They're going to add a lot, and they're going to do the technology side of it, and they're going to do the infrastructure, and they're going to do everything. But I thought it was notable that, and look, I know these cynics will sit here and say, well, what is he going to say? He's been on the job for 15 minutes. He's going to talk bad about his bosses, the owners. Like, I get that might be part of a response, but I take Haim to be somebody who's very genuine. And when he talks about the DeWitts and going to the DeWitts and telling them what is needed and it's going to cost money, that, and basically getting agreement on it. And the second part of that was the return on investment. You could tell that it's very important to him that if you're going to go to the DeWitts and say, we need to spend X amount of dollars for this thing, and this thing, well, then there has to be a return. There has to be a reason why. How is this going to make the organization better? There has to be that return on investment. And at the end of the day, the biggest return on investment is winning baseball games, right? Like, there's dominoes that you push down where you bring in people and they help other people, and then those people help players get better, and then those players being better helps the team playing better, and because the team plays better, you win more games, eventually you win the biggest thing you can win at the end of the season, and you win a World Series. That's the goal, and they're hoping that there are a few dominoes in to that path. But there does have to be the return on investment. There does have to be a direct correlation to, we spent money on this, and this is the result of it. And I got the sense that Haim was very understanding and respectful of that process. That if he was going to ask for something, well, then there's a reason to ask for it, and you're going to get something out of it. So we're going to do a lot on that over the course of the program as well. Again, if you want to chime in, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900, that's how you call, that's how you text. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air. For those of you who are watching on the video stream, we certainly appreciate you sticking with us, and you can leave a comment in the chat, and we'll address some of those as we do go along. We're going to switch gears, though. We're going to talk Blues hockey. Hockey Amy Marks, of course, from the Chris and Amy Show, and also from a brand new TV program that she's going to be doing with Chris Kerber on Matrix Midwest. She's going to join us in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to the Graybar Sports Open Line on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Rolling on here on a Tuesday night, it is a Graybar Sports Open Line. Hockey season is officially underway. The NHL has three games being played tonight, one of them already underway going to the third period. Blackhawks and Panthers are tied 2-2 for the St. Louis Blues. They are going to be opening up their season coming up on Thursday night when they are going to match up against the Minnesota Wild. High expectations for the Blues going into the season. And talk about that, and also a really cool opportunity that she's going to be doing this upcoming year. It is our good friend Amy Marks. Of course, you hear her on the Chris and Amy show, but when she makes her Sports Open Line appearances, she is Hockey Amy, and she joins us right now. Hey, Amy.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having me on. I'm so glad Hockey Amy is back.
Yeah, we're gonna try to do this. I know you're doing weekly Gas House Gang appearances. We'll see mm-hmm. How often we can get you here on Sports Open Line. But before we go any further, you had really big news earlier this week because you are expanding your Blues coverage with a TV show that you and Chris Kerber are going to be doing together.
Yeah, I am so honored. I'm so excited to do a weekly hockey show on Matrix Midwest with Chris Kerber. It's Offside Hockey with Kerbs and Amy. And it's an hour of hockey talk. We talk about the Blues. We talk about what's going on around the NHL. Fun conversations. And I love it. I feel like it's my first true sports love with ice hockey. So being able to talk about the Blues with Kerbs is a lot of fun. He's a hoot.
He is. I'm really looking forward to it. I think a lot of people that hear you on Chris and Amy don't realize that you're really good at breaking down the sport of hockey. And obviously you were involved with our Blues radio broadcast when the Blues were here on KMOX. But it is it's a credit to you that the folks there at Channel 4 and Matrix Midwest recognize the fact that you know what you're talking about when you're talking hockey.
Oh, well, I really appreciate it. You know, I grew up as a rink rat. I was at the U.S. Ice Sports Complex, which then became the Hardee's Complex, which then got knocked down back 30 years ago when the Blues practiced there. And I would hang out. I would interview the players and write for I was 11, 12 years old, Matt. And I would write a little Word document hockey newsletter with all my interviews with Al MacInnis and Pavel Demitra and Joel Quenneville and Mark Bergevin and Tony Twist, Kelly Chase, you name it. And so that was where my love for hockey started. And then I played all through my teens and 20s. And so being able to be on the Blues broadcast with KMOX, and especially that they won their cup on KMOX, was just a thrill of a lifetime.
It's really, really cool, and I'm glad that you're able to do some more hockey stuff here moving forward. Like I mentioned, you'll do the TV show, you'll do Gas House Gang once mm-hmm. a week. If we can get you, we may try to get you about that often here on Sports Open Line to talk Blues hockey. But the expectations this season, I say they're high because this is a really good team, but they're also playing in a stacked division, and just mm-hmm. you look at the really good teams in the NHL, it's very wide open amongst a pretty large group of teams. How good do you think this team can be this year?
I know. I think I'm maybe I'm biased, maybe I'm not. The Blues are going to be good. That's an objective opinion. I know Doug Armstrong a couple of years ago, even last year, we were talking about some kind of transition year. That's over. It's not a transition. That window of time where we thought, well, let's figure out what we've got. The Blues are there. They've arrived. They've got a fast team. They've got a competitive team. We saw what they could be after the Four Nations Cup, struggling in the first half of the season, then being able to go on a run in the second half of the season with a long winning streak, bumping their power play up to third in the league after the Christmas break, and then going toe-to-toe with the Winnipeg Jets, who were arguably the best team in the league in that playoff series. So I mean, yes, they could win the division. I don't think they have to win the division. I think they're, even if they just kind of hang around for a bit, it's going to be such a competitive division that the difference between 1, 2, and 3 could be pretty minimal.
They brought in a couple guys during the offseason. Obviously, we saw them have a ton of success during the final month and a half, and into the postseason. They were so close to pulling off an incredible mm-hmm. upset in the first round, and that just doesn't happen. How much better can they be this season compared to the version of themselves they were down the stretch last season?
I think significantly, Matt. We saw the potential of Jimmy Snuggerud. Now you've got him playing on the top line with Buchnevich and Thomas. Thomas is the number one creator on the team, right? He's the playmaker. Buchnevich is the workhorse. Snuggerud, he's the shooter. He's the goal scorer, and we only got to see a glimpse of him last season. The extension, the contract extension that Doug Armstrong managed with Cam Fowler, adding on 3 years after this year, changes the trajectory of the defense. Now we have time to continue to develop players like Mayu. But Cam Fowler is the kind of guy, the kind of player that can control the pace of the game when the puck is on his stick. And this is a team that looks a bit different than the Craig Berube teams, which were focused more on throwing elbows, a lot of physicality. Not that this team's not physical, but the coach is on pace.
Hey Amy, your cell phone just kind of died out a little bit. I was seeing if it was going to come back. We're gonna redial you real quick just to try to get a better connection. So Daniel, if you can do that, we'll hang up and we'll try to get Amy back here in just a moment or so as we're continuing to preview the Blues season with Hockey Amy. And again, we're looking forward to seeing what she's going to be able to do with the TV show that she's going to be doing with Chris Kerber. Wanted to go through with her some of the other the thing that she just mentioned with Jimmy Snuggerud being alongside of Robert Thomas, and they were together through all of training camp, and it seems like this is a big key. I think those top two lines, though, and we'll see if it ends up being Suter or Shen really on that second line centering, but between Holloway and Kyrou, just those top two lines. So I think we've got Hockey Amy. Amy Mark scores back with us.
Sorry about that.
No problem at all. It feels like these top two lines, and like we'll see if it's Suter centering the second line or Shen centering the second line. Mm-hmm. So that seems to be going back and forth at least a little bit. But when you look at the other pieces in there with Buchnevis, Thomas, Snuggerud, and then Holloway and Kyrou on that second line, it does feel like you've got two lines out there. And that's not, you know, I'm a big Jake Neighbors guy, and he's going to be your third line winger. It feels like there's the opportunity for this team to be relentless on the ice, on always having a line out there that can legitimately go out there and score a goal.
Yeah, and then I don't know where I got cut off, but yes, when you put focus on, as you mentioned, the Buchnevich, Thomas, Snuggerud line, right? Thomas, with being the creator that he is, or the playmaker that he is, not only are you going to see him on the ice a lot, setting up a Jimmy Snuggerud, who's got a tricky shot, by the way, sneaky, deceitful. Goalies can't tell when it's coming, how it's coming. And so to have him playing with Thomas is key. Coach Jim Montgomery said that Thomas is going to be on the power play, obviously, as much as possible. So you've really got to focus on the power play and the penalty kill. You mentioned Jake Neighbors. He could bounce around. I mean, Buchnevich needs to be the workhorse on that team, but maybe we see 63 slide up to that spot, depending on how that goes. But the second line as well, as you mentioned, they're pretty set. Doug Armstrong was on a podcast, I think it was yesterday, a couple days ago, with John Shannon and Dylan Millard on 100% Hockey. And it was really interesting what he said. He goes, you know, we don't have a McDavid. We're not that one-star team, but we've got six or seven guys that could be a top second line with any team in the league. And he said this Blues team is going to be fast, and it's going to be death by 1,000 cuts, which was kind of an interesting way to put it.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Amy Marks, of course, continuing to join us. Just a couple more moments with her. From a defensive standpoint, and you mentioned earlier the extension for Cam Fowler, that top defensive pairing of Cam Fowler and Colton Parayko, mm-hmm. it's so important, especially as you get into the playoffs, that you have that defensive pairing that you can always match up against another team's top line. How confident are you in that Fowler-Parayko pairing that they can be that upper echelon elite defensive pairing?
Very confident. And, you know, that's not a given that two elite defensemen are going to meld and work together the way that Fowler and Parayko have done. They get each other. They get the way the other plays. In fact, the last defensive pairing, I think, that worked so well naturally together was Parayko and Bouwmeester. When you saw the way that those two were able to play together. And so this pairing for me, I think, it's not just that Cam Fowler, like I said, is a great player who controls the pace of play, but it's the fact that he works so well with Parayko that the, you know, the sum of the parts is greater than the individual. And I think they are going to be that elite defensive pair. They're going to get, a lot of ice time. They're going to be workhorses, which makes a difference. I mean, mm-hmm. which makes a difference in this season that's condensed because of the Olympic break. That's why, I mean, you talk about a workload. Jordan Binnington and Joel Holfer, you have to have a strong goaltender pair. You can't, gone are the days of Grant Fuhr playing 80 games of the regular season, because the workload on the goaltenders is going to be enormous, and they're going to have to split it up because of that Olympic break and the way the games are condensed.
Last thing for you, Oscar Sundquist, a little bit banged up. He's going to miss at least the first 3 weeks of three games of the season, I should say. Sounds like Nick Bjugstad will come off the wing on the third line, go center of the fourth line. That will allow somebody like Matthew Joseph to just step in to a third line spot. When we're looking at the fourth line center, we're getting a little bit choosy, but obviously you'd rather mm-hmm. not have an injury situation early on in the year.
Right. And there's no need for it because of the way that fourth line is going to function. We kind of knew that Sundquist might be bouncing in and out, might have to take some of the workload off of him to protect his body. He is a little banged up, not necessarily the quickest guy on the ice, but he brings that experience and that skill level. So, yes, you want him to get better. 3 weeks at the beginning of the season, not a huge deal. But that, again, but not to trivialize the beginning of the season, the Blues, Chris Kerber has said this over and over again, Jim Montgomery has said it, the Blues have to get off to a strong start. They have 11 games in October, 7 of those at home, where I think they're still in an unbeaten streak, Matt. I don't think they've lost in, I don't know, 9-10 games. So they have to get a strong start.
She is Amy Markscores. Hockey Amy, as we call her here on Sports Open Line, now the co-host of Offside Hockey with Chris Kerber on Matrix Midwest. Of course, you hear her on KMOX with Chris and Amy show. She'll be part of Gas House Gang. We'll get her here on Sports Open Line a lot. Amy, thanks for the time. You're going to get very busy now that hockey season's underway.
I'm looking forward to it, Matt. It's a good busy.
All right, very good. That's Amy Markscores joining us, and we appreciate her taking a few moments with us. We will take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk playoff baseball with former Brewers pitcher Jerry Augustine. That Brewers-Cubs series, it's interesting. Brewers took the first two games. We'll talk about that, and we'll also talk some other baseball playoffs. As finally, the first game of the day is underway. They have been dealing with bad weather in Detroit, so the Tigers and the Mariners are finally underway. We'll talk with Jerry Augustine in just a moment as you're listening to a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Now, back to the Graybar Sports Open Line on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Back at it as we do continue on through the evening, taking you until 8 o'clock tonight. We'll hear a little bit more from Chaim Bloom coming up next hour, the new Cardinals president of baseball operations. He was on with the Gas House Gang earlier today. We'll play back much of what he said. Also, Rob Raines wrote a really interesting piece going back through really Chaim's entire baseball history. And we'll talk with Rob coming up next hour about everybody that he talked to in that profile of Chaim Bloom. But right now, we are very happy to welcome onto the program. He is a very good friend of mine, somebody I worked with for years and years and who I certainly miss. He is former Brewers pitcher Jerry Augustine, continuing to do post-game work after Brewers games on the radio, and they've got a lot to talk about. This Cubs-Brewers series, I think for Cardinals fans, very interesting with a couple NL Central teams matched up against each other, and Jerry Augustine joins us right now. Augie, always great to talk to you. How are you?
Oh, this is, I'm so excited. It's been such a long time that we've been able to go on together, but the times we spent were very precious. We had a great relationship, and it was so enjoyable just to be with you talking baseball. And anytime you can talk baseball, you know you're doing a good thing.
I agree with that. But to be perfectly honest with you, I thought this series was going to be tighter. I thought it was one that was likely to be 1-1 after the first two games going back to Chicago. But the Brewers just keep doing what they've done all year, and that's not worry about what the outside expectations are and score a bunch of runs and win a bunch of games. And it's been pretty impressive here in the first two games for Milwaukee.
Well, I think the one thing you have to you look at the Brewers, the Brewers are playing the Brewers brand of baseball. And you talk about this ball club, the way they've been from the beginning of the year, but it all starts with their pitching. They have a great pitching staff, and you look at what they do with starters and with relievers. They've been very consistent. I think they have one of the best defenses in all of baseball, and they've shown that day in and day out. But I think where they really made some strides is in the offensive side, Matt. When you saw this ball club early in the season, they're more of a team that go out and they manufacture runs. They wouldn't hit a lot of home runs, but they put the ball in play. They had the opportunity. They lead the majors with infield hits. They lead the majors with scoring four runs or more so many times during the season. But the second half of the season really made a little turn for the Brewers. They became a team that could not only manufacture runs, but hit home runs. And we saw that's been quite evident in the first two games of this series, where we said opening night, they went out and they manufactured runs, where swinging the bat very well, putting the ball in play, and running the bases very well. Last night, it was all about home runs. All the runs scored were all about home runs. So the Brewers have given the Cubs a little taste of a little bit of everything, a little bit of being able to manufacture, being able to hit home runs, and then the pitching and defense has been outstanding.
Yeah, I think I gave the Cubs maybe more credit than I should have, largely because of the power. You just talked about home runs, and on paper, the Cubs, I mean, it seems like every guy in their lineup is a 30-plus home run guy. But to your point, they've hit some home runs for sure. They've taken some leads in the first two games thanks to the long ball, but that has not resulted in them winning games. It seems like the Brewers have found a way to kind of neutralize the Cubs' power.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that's really big in the game of baseball, and, you know, you've been around baseball so long, the one cardinal rule of baseball is that when you score, you don't let the opponent score. And I think that's really been a credit to this ball club the second half of the season, and especially not so much in September. They had kind of a little bit of a lull, but the rest, when you take from All-Star break up until September, boy, the other team scored, they'd always apply pressure. And I think that's one thing that this team is very good at. They have the ability, whether there's one out or two outs or no outs, to apply pressure. They get guys on base. They run the bases very well. They don't strike out a lot, and they put the ball in play. And that's a real credit to the organization. And you know, this team, this Brewer team, is a really nice blend of veteran players and young players. And you got the leaders on this ball club with a Christian Yelich and Contreras, those type of guys. They really are great leaders. And I tell you what, the young kids have really stepped up and made a big difference, though.
Augie, I was talking about this earlier, because from a Cardinals perspective, they look up to the Brewers. There's a lot of things that the Brewers do organizationally that the Cardinals need to do, or at least need to do better. And it's impressive when you look at the last 10 years of the Brewers, because they go from David Stearns to Matt Arnold as the president of baseball operations, nothing changes. They go from Craig Counsell to Pat Murphy as the manager, nothing changes. They go from Derek Johnson to Chris Hook, a pitching coach, nothing changes. They've had tons of changes on the coaching staff. They've had multiple hitting coaches in that time. What is it? What is it that, whether it's the Cardinals or any other organization, what's the thing that they can look at the Brewers and try to start imitating, replicating, looking in that direction that allows Milwaukee to continue to have the success that they've had without spending tons and tons of money?
Well, I think it started out back when, in fact, it started out back when you were with us in Milwaukee, is their brand changed. And what happened, and that started way back with Doug Melvin. When Doug Melvin, before he left, he made some really great trades. We all know this. CC Sabathia in 2008 was an outstanding trade and really made the difference for the Brewers. And but when you go on from him, David Stearns came in and they started getting that idea with Craig Counsell, saying, hey, you know what? You have to go out and you have to be a good teammate. You have to go out and you have to set your limits as high as you want. We're not going to tell you what your limits are. You just have to go show it. Be a good teammate. And I think that kind of blossomed into where all of a sudden this organization, instead of going out and just looking at the offense and the defensive side of the ball, started really to build themselves in the pitching area. And that started with, you know, you had Corbin Burns and Woody and all these guys that have come in have really made a big difference in this organization. So I think the scouting has done an outstanding job. They've really blossomed. And when you look at this organization from a pitching side, they're very pitching rich up and down the organization. That's where it started. Being in a spot where you have to be strong, and that's in the pitching. They've done that. And I'll tell you what, the fielding, the hitting, and everything else has just followed suit. And this organization from bottom up still goes with the same plan. There's no I in team. There's a lot of me's. You can't have a team unless you have an ME in there. And I tell you, that's really paid off for the organization.
It's from a national perspective, the Craig Council storyline gets played so much. How does that impact anything? I know fans obviously continue to be very unhappy with him in Milwaukee that he left, but is this something that maybe the national folks pick up on a lot because it's a playoff matchup, but it's something that in reality has sort of passed in some ways because he's been there for a couple years?
Well, you've got to look at the organization, what it was, and when Craig came aboard and he tried to bring that culture that you had to go out and be a good teammate and you had to go out and help your team and you got to do whatever you can for the team. And I think that culture, he started that culture, and having Murph as a coach and when he was in college and now with him here in Milwaukee, I think it just transcended over to the way Murph is. And Murph has a different style a little bit. He's more of a college style coaching method with the players. The players understand where he comes from, but I think you build a good team by having good surrounding yourself and good people. And if you look at this Brewer organization and you look at this Brewer team on the major level, all the coaches do a really good job. Murph is just the guy who leads them. He's the one who makes the decision. He's the one that says, I want this and I want that. It's up to those coaches to go out. And they have so many good coaches, Chris Hudson, Jim Anderson in the pitching. They got Erickson on the fielding. These guys work relentlessly with these players to make them better. And you're talking about kids in this ball club and this organization. You take a Caleb Durbin and Ortiz, and you look at all the guys that they have on their ball club that have gone out and done such a great job. And it's really made a difference. And their scouting has done really well because they take up a guy like Andrew Vaughn. But when you look at Collins and Perkins and all these guys, these young players have gotten better because they have a great leadership with the coaches, and they got really great players with a leader as a Christian Yelich, who goes out and plays a lot like a Robin and a Paul Molitor. And these guys go out and they show it each and every day.
Cardinals fans looking up to the Brewers and to the Cubs. They would love to be in that spot. Augie, hopefully we can get Cardinals and Brewers playing games that that matter a little bit more here sooner than later, because I'm jealous that you get to be covering playoff baseball right now.
It's always fun. You know, anytime the Brewers and the Cardinals play, it's a lot of fun to watch. The Cardinals have always been there. It seems like they're in a little bit of a lull right now, but that happens. You have ways that it goes about, but now they have a little bit different in leadership, but they're not that far off. It doesn't take much. It just takes the ability to go out and play good, solid baseball and that good brand of baseball. You got to be solid pitching, playing defense and offense. And if they can do that, good things can happen.
Augie, I'm so glad we got to catch up and talk a little bit. You know, I miss you, and hopefully our paths cross again real soon. But thank you so much for taking the time tonight.
Oh, Matt, you're one of the best. One of the best I've ever worked with. Take care.
Awesome. Very good. That's Jerry Augustine, former pitcher for the Brewers, now doing post-game radio. He was my co-host when I was out there doing stuff, and he is one of the best people walking the face of the earth. And I'm glad I got the chance to talk to him for just a few moments here. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one of the program. And hour number two, we're going to talk with Rob Raines. He had a great profile on Heim Bloom. And using the word profile probably doesn't completely explain what it is. It is a long really feature on Heim Bloom's path to where he is right now. And speaking of Bloom, he was on Gas House Gang earlier today. We're going to replay some of that coming up in just a while as well. Don't go anywhere. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Continuing on for just a few more minutes here in this hour after the 7 o'clock news, we'll get underway with hour number two. Again, Rob Raines is going to join us just after the 7 o'clock news over at stlsportspage.com. He wrote a very long form profile feature on new Cardinals president of baseball operations, Heim Bloom, that I thought was really fantastic. He talked to a lot of people from Heim's past. So we'll have Rob to talk about that coming up in just a while. And then Bloom was on Gas House Gang earlier today. We're going to play back some of that for you, some of the things that he specifically said. He did buy one of the staples of KMOX, and specifically the Sports on a Sunday Morning program hosted by Tom Ackerman, is that the Cardinals president of baseball operations is a part of that. And John Mozeliak was very, very, very gracious with his time over the years. A lot of news was broken when Mo would come on Sunday mornings. And listening to Heim talk earlier today on his way out of that conversation, he said that he has already put the Sunday morning conversation into his calendar, and that is going to be something that he is going to continue to do. So for those of you who expect to hear from the Cardinals president of baseball operations on Sunday mornings, you are going to continue to hear from him. Heim Bloom is going to continue that tradition with Tom Ackerman on Sports on a Sunday Morning. So that is really good news. And I think Mo was incredible. I said earlier, gracious with his time. I think that of everything we can say positively or negatively about Mo, one of the things that I really always appreciated from him, and I think he did this very much on purpose, I've heard him talk about this at times, was he tried to be available to the media. He saw value in us being the opportunity for either A, him to talk to fans on what was going on, or just being there for us because we wanted to talk to him. And I thought he was pretty good with that. Here at KMOX, it was great. And I get the sense that it's going to be more of the same with Heim Bloom. He's going to be somebody that you're going to hear from. And I think the Cardinals realize this, but it's just because they realize it or doesn't realize it doesn't make it more or less true. There is an expectation. Expectation is the wrong word. There is a need, wrote that. There is a need for Cardinals fans to hear from the various people that are running this organization. And we've had Rob Cerfolio on this show. Now Heim Bloom's around. There's other people in the organization as well. It is vitally important that the fans understand what's going on, why decisions are being made, why decisions are going to be made, things like that. And I do think that I think there's an understanding from the organization that that is something that's important and something that they are going to attempt to do here moving forward. So I would suspect a lot of people from the organization will be heard fairly often here on KMOX and other places as well. But it was good to listen to Heim. And again, if you missed any of it, we're going to replay much of what he had to say about 7:30 or so. We're going to get into that coming up next hour. So don't go anywhere. That's it for hour number one of the show. We've got our 7 o'clock news with Michael Calhoun in just a few moments, and then I'll be back with you as Rob Raines is going to be with us to talk through his profile on Heim Bloom that just published, I believe published yesterday. We'll talk with Rob Raines coming up in a few minutes right here on KMOX.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We are back at it right here on KMOX as we get into hour number two of the show. As always, if you want to chime in on anything that we're talking about, you can do so by calling or texting 314-436-7900. You can tweet at me at Matt Pauley on air. And for those of you who are watching on the video stream, you can just leave a comment in the chat and we will get to that. I would highly encourage you to head to stlsportspage.com. Rob Raines did an amazing job writing a very long profile feature on new Cardinals president of baseball operations, Heim Bloom, where it really goes back to the early part of his life, very much so from the early part of his baseball career when he was just trying to get into baseball as a college student. And to talk through much of what he wrote, we're happy to welcome onto the program right now, Rob Raines. Rob, thank you for taking some time with us. How are you?
My pleasure, Matt. Thank you.
I know you. So you were on Dave Glover's show today, and I was talking with them. I didn't want to ask them, hey, are you going to ask Rob about the profile he did on Heim? Because I didn't want them to steal the questions that I was going to ask. And I got confirmation that they really didn't touch much on this. So this is going to be new stuff between you and me.
Yes, sir. Anything you want to know, let me know.
Awesome. Very good. So you talked to a lot of people from Himes' past, both going back to when he was in Tampa, when he was in Boston, and you kind of wrote this profile almost through their eyes of what they saw from him. What struck you as you were talking to people who have known Heim Bloom for many years?
Basically, nobody had anything bad to say about him. You know, I mean, I think they all really respected him as a person. They really respected him as a baseball executive, really respected what he believes, what he, you know, what makes him tick, and just the fact that he was always such a willing student and willing to learn and adapt and just, you know, very smart individual.
One of the really tough things to do in baseball is to be in the game and to also be able to prioritize your family. And it seems like he knows the grind. He knows what it takes to be in baseball on an everyday basis. But at the same time, people always talk about him being a family man. I found that to be interesting because that's a very challenging thing to do in this game.
Yeah, and actually, I think that was one of the things he probably learned from Don Zimmer. I mean, he talked a little bit about the influence of some of the people, you know, early on in his career in Tampa Bay, especially. And one of those was Don Zimmer. And that was one thing that stood out to him was what the balancing act between baseball and his family. And I think that was before, you know, Heim even had a family or was even married at the time, really. So I think that was something that just made an impression on him and that he knew that when it got to be that point in his life, that was going to be his priority. Because he said, you know, in baseball, you realize that it's a job and that people come and go, but the family should be your constant. And that's, you know, what he, you know, how he wants to live his life.
You mentioned Don Zimmer, and it's interesting because Heim is very sharp. He's an Ivy League educated individual. He went to Yale. Obviously he's going to be very good when it comes to analytics and in a modern way of looking at baseball, which is probably something that the Cardinals need to update themselves on a little bit. But at the same time, you talk about his relationship with Don Zimmer. We know that pro scouting is something that he very much believes in, and he wants to get more scouts into the organization. It's a very interesting thing because as modern as he is, it feels like he's able to grab onto some old school aspects of the game all at the same time.
Well, think back to his news conference last week when he made his first official comments after, you know, officially taking over the job. Two of the people he referenced were Branch Rickey and George Kissel. You know, I mean, so he is enough of a baseball historian, enough of a fan of the game that I think he understands and appreciates the history of the game. And you know, but he also talked about, you know, how you have to leverage that history that by doing new things and by being different. He said all these people, you know, who we're talking about because they did something, you know, in history, it was because they forged their own path and they were innovative and they were different. And that's, you know, we have to learn from everything that they did, but also, you know, forge your own path and just kind of make your own way and be different. Don't be afraid to try something different and think outside the box. That was one thing. You know, Mitch Lukovics, who was the other guy I talked to from Tampa Bay, who he was his, you know, assistant. Heim was his assistant as the player development director in Tampa on a very small staff. And Mitch, you know, is a baseball lifer as well, although he never played in the big leagues. He's worked, you know, in baseball forever, played minor league baseball. And he said, you know, here I was, however many years I had in the game at that point, and I'm learning things from Heim. So, you know, I think that's the beauty of the you know, I think Heim is able to relate to a lot of different people, a lot of different areas. I mean, one of the things I asked people was, you know, the fact that he did not come from a traditional baseball background, you know, how did that impact, you know, what he did? And they all said it didn't have any impact at all because he just got in there and people could tell he was smart. They could tell he knew what he was talking about, built that relationship, and it didn't matter that he didn't play baseball or you know, didn't study it, you know, at a, you know, SEC school or something. So, you know, I think that was important as well. He also, of course, obviously got into baseball at the right time when people from, you know, non-traditional baseball playing backgrounds were being looked at by front offices for different jobs, whether it was just in the analytics department or even, you know, some other kind of administrative role. So his timing was good on when he kind of came into the business.
You spoke with Dan Shaughnessy, legendary sports columnist at the Boston Globe. He had an interesting relationship with Heim because he covered him as a sports columnist, but also his grandkids played on a Little League baseball team where Heim's kids were on. Heim actually did some coaching of that Little League team after he was let go in Boston. And I thought it was interesting because that's a very tough market, and people go after you pretty good in Boston. And even with the lack of success that they had with him there, and obviously the Mookie Betts trade, it feels like the people in that market kind of understood that this was more about Red Sox ownership and not an indictment on Bloom himself.
Yeah, at least that's what Dan said. You know, he said, you know, I never blamed Heim for trading Mookie Betts. Anybody who did, I think they're mistaken. He goes, you know, it was all about the owners. He said, I really didn't ever kind of criticize him too much in print because I was going after the owners. And I think that's what most people were targeting at that point, with the Red Sox. He said, you know, and then when they get to the Little League field, I mean, yeah, obviously it was kind of awkward. You know, the coach of the team who I talked to as well lives across the street from Shaughnessy's daughter. So that's kind of what was, and he said it could have been, you know, really awkward, have those guys there with the background they have. But he said, I got the feeling that they really were not enemies, you know, that Dan was, you know, somebody who he said, you know, I liked Heim. Heim was a guy that you rooted for. You know, he was fair. He always took my calls. He was always available. You know, he said, and I wasn't, you know, the last thing you want to do is see a call from me coming if you had the job that he had. So, you know, I thought he was very, honest in his opinions about the fact that, you know, I was just really in kind of a tough situation because you got to remember everything that was going on with the Red Sox at that time, not just the Mookie Betts thing, but, you know, the whole thing about they lost, you know, Cora for years, their manager, they had COVID to deal with, you know, all kinds of stuff that they had to deal with at the time, lost a draft pick. So, and then actually did have a year when they got to the ALCS. So, it wasn't like everything in Boston was terrible. And I also think you're seeing now that, you know, a lot of the things that he did in Boston, which, you know, maybe didn't, you know, people didn't realize or appreciate at the time with some of the young players that they brought into the organization that you're seeing now get to the big leagues with the Red Sox. So, you know, I think that that's something you have to take, you know, sit back and take a look at. I mean, he was only there for 4 years. It wasn't like he was there for 20 years or something, you know. So he said, you know, Dan basically said people didn't know a lot about him when he came here and didn't know a lot about him when he left. So,
when it'd be really easy for him to take shots at the situation in Boston. Ownership obviously meddled. There were people in that front office that predated him that, from what I understand, were very resistant to change. But anytime Heim talks about his Boston situation, says how much he appreciated his time there, loved living there, yada, 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 it really seems like a guy who could, even if it wasn't a direct attack, but just saying some things that you kind of read between the lines on, that doesn't seem to be Heim's style at all.
No, I would say that too. I mean, he's one of those guys that I don't think he's going to say anything instead of saying something negative about somebody. So, and I think that's just the way he was raised. That's just his personality. That's just, you know, for everybody I talk to, that's just kind of who he is as a person. That's not his agenda. That's not something he wants to do. He'd rather take the high road and you know, said, I've been privileged to work in arguably the two greatest baseball towns in America, and it's something I don't take lightly.
One of my favorite quotes, I'll read the quote from the story, and again, people can read the whole thing, and they should read the whole thing at stlsportspage.com, but Heim says, quote, "You have an environment and an atmosphere that's really hard to duplicate." He's talking about St. Louis and Busch Stadium. "I've yet to experience what that feels like in St. Louis, but I'm sure it's going to be pretty great. It's something that motivates me." Rob, he has spent the last 2 years watching baseball games in St. Louis that are not attended the way we are used to seeing Cardinals games being attended. And he talks openly about being motivated by filling that ballpark up once again and it just being a special place where the games really matter.
Yeah, and I think that is his goal. I mean, I do think he wants it to not just short term, but long term. He wants it to be a situation where we're, you know, you're drawing 3.5 million fans every year. You're in a playoff contention every year. Get your share of the pennants. Get your share of the World Series. Have a chance to win it. I think that is his goal for, you know, sustained success. And I think he doesn't think there's any reason why this club can't do that. And that's what his goal is, to make that happen.
Rob Raines celebrating 45 years of covering baseball. You can read him at stlsportspage.com. This is a long one. You might want to take a few minutes and sit down, whether you're on the computer or whether you're reading it on your phone. It's not a two-minute read for sure, but it is worth a little bit of time to sit down. Rob, I really enjoyed reading this. Thank you so much for taking some time with us today.
Thank you for the kind words. I appreciate it. Have a good night.
Very good. That's Rob Raines joining us on the program. We appreciate him spending a few moments with us. Again, STLSportsPage.com. Whenever I have people who write stuff like this, I always want to kind of whet the appetite for people to go read it themselves. I don't want to take everything away from it, but I thought it gave an interesting insight to Bloom and his path. I didn't even get into it with Rob, but the fact that he started with an unpaid internship and working with the San Diego Padres, and something that you'll hear this from him. Again, we're going to run some of what Haim had to say earlier today on Gas House Gang. We're going to do that around 7:30 or so less than 15 minutes away from that. Bernie Miklas asked him today about what can you learn from a team like the Milwaukee Brewers? Because right now, it was the Tampa Bay Rays previously. You know, we always go through these periods where we look at the teams that are doing the most with the least. So at one point, we always look to Oakland. And then we always look to Tampa. And I think right now we're looking to Milwaukee, right? So that's the team that right now is outplaying what they spend on baseball. And it's because they make really smart decisions. It's because they have really smart people in the organization. I had forgotten at the time, but Haim brought this up today when he was asked, Bernie Miklas asked him very specifically, what can the Cardinals learn from the Brewers? And Haim's answer is great. Again, you'll hear it, but essentially he said, you don't want to replicate any other team. You don't even want to replicate what you did at a previous stop because it's a new place. If you try to replicate what somebody else is doing, he made the analogy that it's like wearing somebody else's clothes. Those clothes are going to look better on the person. They're just not going to quite fit right. So you got to blaze your own path. And Haim was part of a path that was being blazed in Tampa. He was part of a path in Boston, and now he's part of a path here in St. Louis. But going back to the Brewers connection, Matt Arnold, who is currently the president of baseball operations in Milwaukee, he took over for David Stearns when Stearns left to take over the Mets. I guess Stearns was on as an advisor for 1 year while Arnold was in charge, but Stearns now with the Mets. Anyways, Arnold and Haim worked together in the Tampa Bay front office previously. So when it comes to like the baseball tree of influence, there are many of the same influences towards a Matt Arnold, and what's going on in Milwaukee are some of the same influences towards a Haim Bloom. So when we talk about Milwaukee and what they do so well, and we try to say, well, what can be applied from that in St. Louis, I think it's more than just lip service. It's the fact that the president of baseball operations for the Brewers and now the president of baseball operations for the Cardinals each worked in Tampa previously, and that is absolutely going to be part of what this organization is moving forward. For me, the big difference is, and this is why I always talk about Atlanta, it's doing those things, but then keeping your players. And Tampa has not kept their players. The Brewers sometimes do, sometimes don't. They pick and choose their spots. They're able to extend a Christian Yelich for an extended amount of time, but they have to move on from a Devin Williams. And so the Brewers do it more than the Rays, but not to the extent that the Braves are able to do with keeping their own players, and hopefully what the Cardinals are able to do, because the Cardinals are always going to be able to expend more on payroll than what they do in Milwaukee, and obviously what they do in a place like Tampa. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to shift off baseball for just a quick moment. I want to talk through a little bit. You've heard it on the news. Tom Ackerman doing reports in Michael Calhoun's news about what's going on with the UFL, the league that the Battlehawks play in. It's going to look different moving forward, and the strategy of the league is changing a little bit as well. We'll talk about that, and then once we're done with that, we'll get back into baseball and listen into much of what Haim Bloom had to say earlier today here on the station. We'll take a break. We got more in just a moment. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Now, back to the Graybar Sports Open Line on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Quick segment here. Want to give us as much time as possible to kind of go back through much of what Chaim Bloom had to say today during the Gas House Gang. So that's going to be coming up in our next segment. Did want to acknowledge real quickly the announcement today that was made by the United Football League about what's going to happen moving forward. They are changing some cities and they are changing some venues in the league. Now, one thing that is not changing, the St. Louis Battlehawks and where the St. Louis Battlehawks are playing at the Dome at America Center. Battlehawks continue to really be the bell cow of this league and continue to lead in from an attendance standpoint. But if you've ever watched, say, Battlehawks road games, you've seen a lot of empty seats. So the league made the announcement today that they're going to be moving some of their teams into soccer venues, which tend to be a little bit smaller. It would almost be like moving the Battlehawks over to where City plays at Enterprise Park. They wouldn't have enough room for all the fans that tend to go to Battlehawks games. And then there are also some new teams that are being brought in as they are going to work in three new markets in Columbus, Ohio, also Louisville, Kentucky, and Orlando going to be brought in. Those are going to replace three markets that, at least for now, are going away. So they're just trying to get everything right. And I appreciate it'd be really easy to just kind of shut this whole thing down, but they are continuing to work on an every year basis to try to make spring football work. And a lot of people before them have tried to make spring football work. It works here in St. Louis. So far, it's not working across the board, across the entire league. But by going into smaller venues, that's probably a smart decision for them. And then hopefully they can build those respective fan bases in those cities. And you don't have the bad look of empty seats. When we come back, we hear from Chaim Bloom from the Gas House Gang earlier today here on KMOX.
Back to the Graybar Sports Open Live on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Continuing to take you. We'll be here till 8 o'clock this evening. Also have a full 2-hour show coming up tomorrow night. Thursday Night Football will shorten us on, obviously, Thursday night. And then we'll have a 2-hour show coming up on Friday. If you missed it earlier today, Cardinals President of Baseball Operations, Chaim Bloom, appeared on the Gas House Gang. He did the Tuesday spot that Oliver Marmol did all season long. And we got to hear some different things from Chaim than what he said on his press conference and the long interview that he had with John Rooney, the conversation he had with me on the day of the press conference. So I wanted to go back and play back for you some of what he did say today. If you want to hear the whole interview from start to finish, you can do so. The video version of it available, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and the audio version of available where you get your podcast if you find the Gas House Gang podcast. One of the first things that Chaim did announce when he officially began his tenure as president of baseball operations was that manager Oliver Marmol would be back next season. He's had a front row seat to watch in this team. He's gotten to know Ollie here over the last couple of years, and he was asked earlier today about what he's really learned about Ollie during this time.
One of the cool things about this setup is that it gave me a chance to really get to know him. I've talked about it before. I wanted to also make sure, particularly this year, that this unique setup did not make things more difficult for him. So, I wanted to respect, obviously, that one-on-one communication that needs to happen between the manager and the president of baseball ops, and not however unintentionally run interference on the things he was working with Mo. But when I was in town, I'd get together with him. Sometimes I'd pop in the office, but sometimes we get together away from the field and just talk baseball, talk about the club, pick his brain. I wanted him to know, look, I'm going to be here for you. I will be available. If there's anything you want from me, you need my opinion, you want to know how I feel about something, I'll be here, but I'm not going to try to run interference on what you're doing. And through that, we were able to talk about a lot of things, build a good relationship. We get deeper in the summer, and now as we're getting closer to the transition, I start talking to him about how I'm seeing things, where I think we need to go, and how I think we need to get there, and just felt a lot of alignment there. So at the end of the day, those things are so important. It's obviously a relationship that grows over time, where you build trust over time. But in terms of feeling like we're aligned in where we need to go. I think that's there. And I've been impressed just by how these guys play for him and how the group has responded to his leadership.
So that's what he's learned about Ali. He also went into a little bit about what really impressed him about the job that Marmol has done during his Cardinals tenure.
You know, we could talk about game strategy, and obviously that's a huge part of that job. But to me, the foundational pieces of it really get more to culture, putting players in position to succeed, and really pushing the organization towards the goals that we're trying to achieve. Now, you know, in 2025, that was not easy because obviously there's a number of different things, short term, long term, that we are trying to do as an organization. And it's not hard it's not easy to hit all those things at once and to balance them, make sure we're giving playing time to everybody while still rewarding the people who step up and perform, make sure we're keeping players positive through the ups and downs of the season. That even keel that you describe is so important. This season is just too long, and there's too many games to have someone who's riding that roller coaster every single day. People look to their leaders to be that steadying influence. And if they are that, I think players respond to that. I think staff respond to that, because this is a game where no matter what happened yesterday, you got to be able to come in with your head screwed on right and get to work. And if your manager is embodying that, then that's something that the whole clubhouse can do. If you don't have that in that seat, it becomes really, really hard for everybody else to do that.
So, of course, moving forward, one of the big questions, probably the biggest question, is what's the roster going to look like next season, and what's the roster going to look like in years to come? Because the roster, clearly, obviously, it needs a pretty significant upgrade. Himes been able to be in the organization again, getting a front row seat to what was going on. There was so much talk this past year about runway and learning about players. So he was asked a bit about what he had learned about the roster so far and how that's going to impact things moving forward.
This game is too humbling to ever sit there and say, I've seen enough. I know 100% what this player is. Like, if you feel that way, the game will sometimes prove you wrong. So there's always benefit to seeing more. Now, that said, we also still want to use those roster spots well. We want to give opportunity to the right people. We want to be aggressive in pursuing the goals that we have as an organization and making moves accordingly. So you'd always like to see more, but the reality is it's also a competitive business. And if there are opportunities to improve our core and to improve our roster, we don't want to let the desire to see more get in the way of good opportunities for our organization. So I always love to see more, and you should never give up on players, but the reality is roster spots are finite and, you know, competition is real.
For Bloom to be able to do what he wants to do with the Cardinals, he's going to have to get a lot of support from ownership, and especially considering what happened with him in Boston, dealing with ownership that was not fantastic. You know that he came in here needing some assurances that he would get the support that he needed from the DeWitts, from ownership, and he did say that he has asked a lot of the DeWitts.
But just the experiences over 20 years in baseball and just knowing what it takes, at least in my view, to get an organization really humming, that's pretty comprehensive. There's a lot of pieces to this. And, you know, what you see on the big league field is obviously it's the end goal. It's everything, but it's really the tip of the iceberg. And for that to go well over time, as the Cardinals have shown so well over time, you need a lot of things in place. And so if I was going to have that opportunity to really get to know the organization, to understand where we were, at least in my opinion, I wanted to make sure that I put out there as much as I could about that, because that alignment that you talked about is so important. I mean, the reputation of the DeWitt family and what's happened here over the last 30 years is part of the reason that I came here in the first place when I was consulting in 2024. And it's a big piece of this, just because of the consistency with which they've operated the organization. That's so important. Obviously, you know, I talked about this at the press conference. The operating model really needs that engine to be running really well. That acquisition and development engine has to be in really, really good shape. But when it is, that operating model can go and the organization can run consistently. And that's so valuable. So I wanted to make sure that having had the opportunity to really get to know it, that I took advantage of that opportunity and made sure that there was alignment. Like, you don't want to be in a situation where you're not aligned with your bosses. That's not good for anybody. So at the risk of maybe one too many bathroom breaks, I wanted to make sure that we had a chance to talk through a lot of different things, because I do believe there's so much that goes into it, and came away from that feeling really good. Like, you want to feel in this chair like you can really go full speed ahead. Obviously, you want to keep everybody connected, keep everybody informed, but you just want to make sure that everybody's seeing this the same way. They see the finish line the same way, and the path there the same way. And I came away from that feeling really good about it.
And as the organization moves forward, and whether it's this offseason with maybe an opportunity popping up, whenever payroll might go up, whatever resources need to be given, he feels like this is an ownership group that absolutely will give him everything that he needs.
Yeah, that's where the track record's really important. And I think the track record of this organization and this ownership is that they've always wanted to invest in the organization. And they've done so thoughtfully. They've done it really consistent with a bigger picture and obviously wanting to make sure that the revenues are in line with that projected investment. But yeah, they've always backed what the organization's needed. Look, this has not been an organization that has just jumped, they cannonballed into the deep end of the pool in free agency time and again. But like I said, they've been thoughtful about it. And I think that the biggest part, you know, especially when it comes to free agency, is investing smartly. It's not just about dollars spent. It's about how does that fit into your strategy? Some of the best moves that you can make in free agency, including the history of this organization, sometimes involve being disciplined, drawing a line. And, you know, sometimes that might mean you miss out on a player. But if you've done your homework well and you've thought about this right and you have the development system going and you have guys coming up from within, sometimes that can be a blessing in disguise. So I understand, obviously, the appeal of that from a fan perspective, and it's something we share. But the most important thing is that it actually fits the rest of your strategy. Otherwise, it really just falls into the shortcut category. And like I said the other day, like I don't want to take those because they tend not to work, and they actually tend to make it harder to win over time because this game is really unforgiving and it will not look kindly on you if you try to shortcut the hard work that it takes to win consistently.
If you remember, he was originally brought into the organization to do a full audit of everything that was going on. And that was a couple years ago. And he presented his findings to ownership. And one of the first things he realized was the organization simply needed a lot more people, and they will continue to take more people moving forward.
I didn't mince words, you know, when I was able to do my assessment. And frankly, I don't think it was a surprise. I did think we just needed more people. You know, so I know there's been a lot made about technology, and that's important too, but this is a people business and it starts with people. You want enough people, you also need the right people. So it's not just about, hey, let's throw numbers at it. You want to make sure you're doing it thoughtfully. You're growing in a way that feels more organic, where it doesn't just feel like this, you know, a clown car effect of like a bunch of people just charging in the room. And now what's everybody supposed to do? You want it to kind of build on itself and evolve over time. And you want to be thoughtful about it. And I had laid out, obviously, kind of a year one. This was back in 24 when we talked about what the organization needed on the player development and performance side. And then looking ahead to what would come this fall, you know, what I thought we would be in a position to want to do this fall. Obviously, I've updated that as we've gone through the year, but they've been great about all of it. You know, they understand the importance of a total organization. You know, they want us to be smart about it, as I would too if I were in their shoes, and we're going to do that. But they've really backed everything that we've asked for, whether it's been people, whether it's been, you know, technology, including some stuff that we got this past year, some that's still on the docket for 2026. So that's been great. I anticipate that continuing over time. And I think it's our job to make sure we are giving them a great return on their investment and that we can demonstrate that to them over time. We should hold ourselves to that standard, frankly, to invest well, not just to invest.
So that first year for Heim when the organization was about going through the full audit and then presenting his findings, the second year was about really putting together what the team was doing from a player development and performance side of things. He talked a little bit about what they're trying to do and what they've been able to already accomplish in that area.
Probably the best shorthand to think about it, even though they do work hand in hand, is like player development is really your field staff, your skill staff, people wearing baseball pants. Performance department with a lot of these other expert resources that we bring to bear on trying to get the most out of our players. So that's athletic trainers, it's strength coaches, it's sports science folks, it's nutrition, it's mental health and performance, and more in that vein. The number one thing for me was those groups not just getting along, but really closely collaborating, really working together to get the most out of a player. I think that's been one of the biggest changes that the industry has undergone really in the last 5-10 years. And I don't think it's like a battle that's been won yet. I still think there's ground to cover. And so I wanted to make sure we were doing that really well so we can win that race. And that honestly takes more work. It takes more communication, because it's so easy for, you know, a pitching coach to say, hey, make sure you get your stuff done in the weight room. And it's so easy for, you know, the strength coach to make sure all the workout times are set so that everybody can get out on the field at the appropriate time. It's harder to make sure that those folks are actually collaborating, actually talking with each other, and making sure that all of the programming points towards the goals that we have for the player. So there's two aspects to that. One, like I talked about, is really just aligning those departments. That was part of why we set this up the way we did, with having those two departments report to the same place at the assistant GM level. And we hired Surf to fill that role. And just making sure everybody's aligned and communicating, so that if we have an objective, if we have something we want a player to do, it's not just something that happens on field. It's something that everything that player does from the second he walks into the building, and in some cases when you get to nutrition and sleep and stuff like that, even before he walks in the building, but from the second he walks in the building till when he leaves, everything is pointing in the direction of getting this player towards that goal. And the other thing then is individualizing things a lot more. So what that ended up meaning that we were able to implement this year is, you know, not just grouping players into bigger buckets where we have 3 or 4 or 5 different training plans. It's really trying to get to an individualized training plan for every single player that's transparent to them. And then we built on that, where in the offseason, we were able to send all these players home with individualized plans for their offseason. So we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. Obviously, there's going to be common themes to these plans, but making sure things are both working together and then geared towards that individual are both really important. I thought we made great, great strides on that in 2025. Feel next year it'll be even better with the experience of this year under our belts. We were able to set up some things process-wise, you know, for instance, that make sure that all those folks at an affiliate are sitting down on a regular basis, on a schedule basis, talking to each other about, okay, where's this player supposed to be? What are we trying to accomplish? Where are we at on this? How is all of our programming helping us towards that goal? Are we actually doing the right things? Do we need to make adjustments? And then once that becomes part of the routine and everybody gets used to doing that a few times a year, it stands to reason you're just going to be more intentional in how you develop your players, and you should have better results.
When you look at the Cardinals, you certainly say in the division they trail the Brewers, and the Brewers don't have some of the resources that the Cardinals have. The Cardinals certainly can push payroll more than the Brewers are ever going to, and you see what they are doing, and you try to investigate what is leading them to have so much success, and so much success over a long-term plan, really, where they've had a lot of people in a lot of different roles. They've had multiple managers. They've had multiple head of baseball operations. Their coaching staff has changed over, yet they have continued to win. So Heim did talk a little bit about what there is to learn from that other team in the division, a team that's playing some really good baseball right now, the Milwaukee Brewers.
They're operating at a really high level, and you should always look at your competition. Like you said, you never want to copy the competition. And for that matter, I don't want to copy the places I've been, even if I'm proud of what we did there, because every organization is different. And all that trying to copy guarantees is two things. One, you're probably going to be behind because they're still moving forward. And two, you're basically wearing somebody else's clothes, and they're not going to look quite as good on you as they did on the person who actually owns them. You got to find your own way. But at the same time, understanding best practices, learning from the game, learning from the competition is really important. And they've done some really good things there. You know, there are people there that I have worked with, or people that have come out of that organization that I've worked with since they were in that organization. Matt and I were together with the Rays for a number of years. A lot of respect for a lot of people there. There's some things that I know they've done, systematizing development in some of the ways that I've talked about that they were on earlier, really able to build replicable processes, especially in their pitching development. They've done some amazing things in the international market. They do a lot of things up and down their organization where they are just winning on the margins everywhere. And, you know, sometimes when you say that, people say, okay, great, winning on the margins is good, but what about the big stuff? Well, I don't think it has to be an either or. And we should try to dominate every area that we can. And those little things add up, just like little things add up over the course of 162 games. It's no different. Like, so much of what seems like revolutionary steps in this game are really just the result of just getting after it day after day and moving the ball every day, finding little things to get better at. And they've done an amazing job of that. You know, I hope obviously we can take some things from them, as we should from all of our competition, but also that we find the best way to do it here. And it's been a big part of how I've wanted to set this up. Look, we have amazing people in this organization. I wasn't surprised to find that, because I know the success that the organization has had and the respect that the organization carries in the industry. My hope is that by bringing in some new perspectives, you know, fresh voices, and if they're people that have the right values, that everybody comes together, collaborates to build something that's better than what any of us has experienced individually.
And then the final thing from Heim Bloom, and I thought this was really interesting because we're calling it a rebuild. A lot of people are calling it a rebuild. They have avoided using that term. He actually has a very good reason why, and thought this, we'll finish off with this. This is him explaining why he is not so much labeling it as a rebuild.
I don't want to label it, but I don't mind if people do. There's no like taboos for me around that. I just want to be clear about what we're trying to accomplish. And the most important thing for me is just to be clear on that we're going to try to do things towards that bigger goal, and that is more important right now than what it might mean today or tomorrow. And the more we do things towards that bigger goal, the quicker we are going to get there. I hate timetables, just because I think sometimes they can weigh you down, they can sort of shackle you. And when I talk about not conceding anything, I actually think that's a mindset. I think one of the traps that comes when you establish a longer term goal is that you can sort of unintentionally relax and say, well, we don't have to be great today. And I understand that from a standpoint of like, okay, how many wins are we going to project for? That's something that, you know, you want to be realistic about how you can build that over time. But in terms of how I get up this morning and come into work and think about the work I'm going to do today, in terms of how I want a coach thinking about what they're going to bring to making our players better, or a scout getting after it out in the field, or for that matter, our players when they walk in, if we get in that mindset that this is a long-term project, we don't have to be great today, it's just going to take longer. So I really don't think we can allow that to be our mindset culturally. I just don't think it's a winning mindset, and I don't think we should wait until our quote-unquote foot is on the gas to try to have a winning mindset in this organization. So we're just not going to do that. I don't think that's ever been what the organization has done. I do think we need to be prepared in terms of our strategy and how we think about the moves that we make and what we're aiming for. I think we need to be prepared to be in this mode for multiple years. But again, I think if we stay really focused on it, we will get there quicker, and just not worry too much about trying to hit an arbitrary timetable and just worry about doing the right thing day after day.
Cardinals President of Baseball Operations Heim Bloom speaking on the Gas House Gang earlier today here on KMOX. One more break. We'll come back and we'll wrap up the program. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it on a Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. Just a couple minutes left in the show. We'll get out of here again. Back at you tomorrow night for a full program. We'll have the Rush Hour show during 5 o'clock, and then Sports Open Line begins at 6 o'clock tomorrow, and look forward to having you for that. I want to say thank you to all of my guests tonight. Hockey Amy Marks, of course, in the first hour. Jerry Augustine, former Brewers pitcher, joined us in the first hour. And then Rob Raines earlier this hour had some really good conversations, and was fun to be able to play back for you some of what Heim Bloom had to say today. So a busy, busy program today. Hopefully we'll have more of that coming up tomorrow. Have a wonderful rest of your night, and we'll talk to you again right here on KMOX.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.